Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we're talking about a few updates within the supply chain. We've got news of a new nickel contract for Tesla, also updates out of China. We've got a new note from Credit Suisse ahead of Tesla's Q1 delivery and production report this weekend, and a couple other items as well. Red day in the markets today, but not a bad performance for Tesla, just finishing down 0.5% to $1,093.99, while the NASDAQ was down 1.2%, faring significantly worse than the Dow and the S&P. Generally, that's going to be a much tougher environment for a high-growth stock like Tesla, so pretty solid overperformance on the day. That said, it was a relatively low volume day for Tesla today, about 20 million shares traded. That was the lowest volume in almost 3 weeks. All right, so the big news for today is in the supply chain. We've got a report from Bloomberg today that Tesla has agreed to a, quote, multi-year supply deal with mining giant Vale S.A. The agreement, which hasn't been announced, covers nickel from Canada, according to people familiar with the matter who asked not to be named, discussing private details, end quote. We've talked about Vale before. They are one of the largest nickel producers in the world. Statista has them at number 2, producing about 170,000 metric tons in 2020. And Vale themselves, on their website, claims to be the largest producer in the world. As for their operations in Canada, which this report from Bloomberg specifically references, they say that each year in Canada, they produce about 65,000 metric tons of nickel. Now, of course, we don't know the details of the contract aside from it being multi-year, as they mentioned, so we don't know how much of that nickel Tesla would be getting. We don't know if Vale is going to be increasing that production, or at least I don't know that, but just for context, 65,000 metric tons, that'd be enough for about 1.5 to 2 million nickel-based battery EVs per year. So there is some potential there with the numbers from Canada for this to be a pretty sizable chunk of Tesla's nickel needs, but perhaps even more importantly than that, with Vale being such a large producer of nickel, them coming to a contract agreement with Tesla probably bodes well for the companies continuing to work together on other projects and potentially in other areas. We've been hearing rumors now for a long time about these companies trying to work together. Vale's CFO back in October spoke to Bloomberg and said that they were talking to Tesla negotiating, but he noted that that could take a long time and that it's a long road with a lot of parties involved. But at the same time, he also thought that the pinch point for nickel may not come for 3 to 4 more years from then, which would be another couple of years from now. Now, obviously things have changed, but the point is that Tesla has been working on this supply agreement with Vale for a long time now. That alone gives a hint to the level of significance. And as we've talked about on many other occasions, this is far from the only contract that Tesla has done that for. Now, I'm not suggesting that negotiating multi-year supply contracts is some sort of groundbreaking strategy from Tesla, but for an automaker to be working directly with a mining company, I don't know that we have many other reports of that happening. Now, with Tesla's intent to build their own battery cells, it obviously makes sense, but it's just a good reminder of how vertically integrated Tesla is doing and some of the strategic advantages that that can have with Tesla working so closely in the supply chain to make sure that everything that they need is going to be there. Automakers with a little bit less vertical integration have a little bit less control over what's happening in the supply chain. That creates additional risk for them, and we've seen to an extent how that has played out over the last year, whether it's semiconductors with Tesla being more vertically integrated and adaptable due to owning and therefore having the technical knowledge required to be able to shift and diversify their supply chain and use different processors, or as we have talked about with Tesla's extremely high growth plans, that positions them better during a period of shortage. Because if there is some constraint, well, maybe Tesla can't grow at 100% then, but they can probably still grow at 50% versus an automaker that maybe planned to be up a few percentage points. Maybe a shortage puts them down 10, 20%. I mention that because the same logic applies when we're talking about raw materials here. We're talking about nickel supply. Tesla has their high growth targets extremely well mapped out. They know what they want. They're going to order it. Tesla, and increasingly more, their suppliers are going to have confidence that they are going to need those materials versus another automaker that's maybe a little bit newer into electric vehicles, maybe a little bit less comfortable that they're going to be able to pull all these pieces together to grow at such a high growth rate. They're going to be significantly more risk averse in how they approach their supply contracts. Working only with battery suppliers rather than battery suppliers and mining companies, it's almost a layer of abstraction of that same concept. Things like this are so important and generally just don't get enough recognition. So it's nice to see, if we go back to this Bloomberg article, some recognition of that. Bloomberg writing that, quote, "Unlike most of its peer automakers, Tesla has spent years focusing on how to secure its own nickel supplies," end quote. They also note a nickel contract that we have previously talked about that Tesla has with Talon Metals. And they got an extremely telling quote here from the chief external affairs officer for Talon, who said, quote, "People don't realize how far ahead Tesla is when it comes to securing the supply chain for raw materials and an integrated approach to battery materials," end quote. That's an important statement, one that should not be easily forgotten about. Now, obviously, we're talking about nickel in this conversation, but we have talked about many other contracts that Tesla has secured for other materials. It does extend beyond nickel. Anyway, wrapping up with that topic, the last thing that I'll mention is, again, related to Vale. You may remember that we talked on the podcast about 6 months ago or so about them. Just wanted to be clear that when we had talked about it before, that was a separate topic than the news that we have today. That story was about Vale selling off a nickel mine in New Caledonia, and Tesla being reported to be involved with the new owners through a technical and industrial partnership. Obviously, that fits well with what we're talking about today, but just wanted to point out that that was different in case people were remembering Vale being brought up before. All right, next up, but staying on the theme of raw materials, as we had talked about previously, there was a potential for President Biden to invoke the Defense Act related to battery-related materials. The Wall Street Journal today reporting that, according to a person familiar with those plans, that could happen as soon as this week. Quote, the administration would include minerals like lithium, nickel and graphite, cobalt and manganese under the Korean War era national security mobilization law, the person said. The designation could help mining companies access government funding for feasibility studies on mining development, productivity and safety improvements, or on how to wring more of these metals out of ore already produced at facilities operating in the U.S. It could also prompt Congress to dedicate more money to such efforts, the person said. End quote. The person also noted that companies would still be subject to regular environmental review processes and permitting would not be expedited. At this point, I think it's tough to have too strong of an opinion on this. I think there's definitely ways that this could be used positively, but also the potential exists for it to be used in an overhanded manner. There are definitely some things within the Defense Production Act that could lead to a little bit too much intervention, even going as far as putting a finger on the allocation of materials, which is something we just talked a lot about, how Tesla has done a really good job to secure. There is potential for government interference on that, especially if a company like Ford or GM fails woefully at it. There is some potential for them to be helped at the expense of Tesla. Now, based on what the Wall Street Journal is reporting here, doesn't sound like that would be the direction anything would be heading. So hopefully it stays as a positive, but again, I just think it's a little bit too early to make any determination on that. Next up, we continue to stay in the supply chain. Like I said, supply chain heavy day here, but we do have a report from Reuters. This was actually out yesterday, but Reuters is reporting that Aptiv, one of Tesla's suppliers, is sending home workers at their Shanghai production facility for similar COVID-related reasons like we had talked about with Tesla and Giga Shanghai. Reuters reports that those workers were also told to stay home on Wednesday and then just await further notice. Two sources did confirm to them that this plant does supply Tesla parts. So like we had talked about when Tesla first shut down Giga Shanghai for COVID testing a couple weeks ago, Tesla suppliers in China also face those same risks. So we'll continue to monitor what's going on in Shanghai. Right now, they're just continuing with this staggered lockdown approach, which has obviously been quite severe, and we'll just have to see how that policy evolves. All right, next up, we've got an update from Credit Suisse. They have released a new note ahead of quarter end, talking about some of these supply chain challenges and updating their delivery forecast. They have reiterated their outperform rating, saying that, quote, amid rising oil prices, EV uptake is an increased priority, and with Tesla the global leader in EV, its long-term case is amplified, end quote. But for Q1 specifically, they are expecting deliveries lower than last quarter and lower than consensus at 307,000 versus the consensus that they list here at 313,000. Sounds like that has been dropping over the last couple of days, but on Monday, March 28th, the company compiled consensus from Tesla was 312,500. I'll go through my detailed production and delivery forecasts either tomorrow or Friday, but just a couple of things to keep in mind as we're talking about this topic. Q1, there's been a number of headwinds. First, we just had the Chinese New Year, obviously downtime related to that. Then the factory shutdowns that we have had here for Giga Shanghai in March. And then as we have talked about, Q1 in general just has two fewer calendar days than Q4. So even if Tesla doesn't have sequential growth in deliveries, you have to factor those things in, which of course we'll think about, but Wall Street may not be as keen to acknowledge. It also sounds like we may not be getting the usual insight that we've come to expect from Tesla analyst Shanghai on Twitter, who usually around the end of the month provides a number that ends up being pretty close to what the CPCA has been reporting for Tesla's retail sales in China. That account on Twitter today said that something has changed and they are afraid that they cannot help anymore. So not a huge deal, but still probably a little bit noteworthy. All right, last couple of things. First, I want to share a quick clip from CNBC this morning. They had Gene Munster of Loop Ventures and Gordon Johnson on, as they often do. And Gene actually brought up a topic that we had talked about on the episode yesterday. So I wanted to share his thoughts on that subject.
But I think what's most important related to meme stocks and what the difference here is to the fundamentals. And that would come back to our job is to identify how many vehicles are they going to sell over the next 2 to 5 years? What's the profitability around those vehicles? I mean, it's as simple as that. And I would say on the identifying vehicle perspective, if we're going to take the approach of trying to cut through the noise, Gordon's great at sharing with me different insights he have. I have an insight for people to look at, and this is inspired by Rob Mauer, who is pretty active, I would say, in identifying every detail around Tesla. But Rob pointed out the GM has a new factory in Spring Hill, Michigan. It is their new electric Lyriq is the new car. It's just opening up. They also have the Giga Berlin factory. Both of those have videos that have been released. One of them was produced by GM. The other was not produced by Tesla. But I would just look at those videos. And the reason why I mention that, I think it draws a stark distinction. Now, GM is not the whole auto industry, but how traditional auto is approaching manufacturing versus how Tesla is. It is well spent 7 minutes of viewing. And I think that that really anchors or is evidence to me about this gap that we have in terms of production and ultimately what I think is going to drive the stock, which is how many vehicles they're going to produce and sell.
So I'll cut it off there, but Gene continues on to talk about Tesla's demand and order backlog, but just want to say a huge thanks to Gene for the shout out on that. Gordon's response was that we shouldn't talk about videos that are unofficially made by fanboys of Tesla and compare those to videos that are made by GM. I don't know if Gordon was talking about my video or the drone video itself, but the drone video, that was contracted by Tesla, and ultimately I'm not sure it matters who is actually taking the video. That doesn't really have anything to do with so-called fanboys, other than if you're going to identify us in that way, the fanboys understanding that this is a stark difference that is very important, while apparently Gordon does not. He also made some comment about just looking at Twitter writers for Tesla. I don't know if that was related to me. I'm not super active on Twitter. My last tweet that wasn't a reply to someone was February 21st, so not really a good critique of me. And for any further comments on that, I'll just defer to the interview that we did about a year and a half ago, and you can decide who made the better points at that time. Lastly, then, also related to that drone video, Tesla did share a little bit more of that on their Instagram today, including what a lot of people were waiting for, and that was the shot of Elon Musk dancing towards the drone. So fun to see that footage and a good way to wrap up the episode. So that is where we'll leave it for today. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. And we'll see you tomorrow for the last episode of Q1, the Thursday, March 31st episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.